The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
It's hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. I like to say that we put Pastor Marty Springer through the ringer. I'm in rhyming mode these days, and I apologize. I should know better. But that was a tough text here in the first hour of our discussion as we made our way through a couple of chapters and a little bit more in Deuteronomy, the study of Deuteronomy. Matthew, are we doing Matthew next, Diane? Is that right? Yeah, okay. We'll be involved with the Gospel of Matthew here before too very long here on our Bible study program. We'll wrap up Deuteronomy, I don't know, maybe next week sometime. The next week, is it? No, whatever. And now we're going to do our Ask the Pastor Hour. We're joined by Pastor Ron Bright. He is pastor at Christ Lutheran Church in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, and sometimes Pastor Bright gets it right.
Excellent. I've been one-upped.
Not always.
Now I'm going to have to go to work, see if I can come up with something. Pastor Bright, who gets it right. Is it hot in Pennsylvania like it is here?
Yeah, it's been very hot. We're up in the mid-90s.
Yeah, we're looking at about 98 today, I think.
Yeah, when you go outside at 8 o'clock and all the dew is already burnt off, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. So how the Steelers looking this year?
Looking pretty good. We're going to check them out. I'm going to the preseason with the Lions Saturday, so
yeah.
Hopefully they perform well. Of course, a cheesehead by nature, by heart. We do have some, we support the local team as well.
Well, if you got to be a displaced Packer fan, being a Pittsburgh Steeler territory is not all that bad.
Both teams have a very long and tenuous fan base, so we do have that in common.
So I don't know if this is even relevant or not, but when the quarterback there, Ben Roethlisberger, gets himself in some, what do we say, moral trouble, ethical trouble there, and winds up with a 6-game suspension from the NFL commissioner, so he can't play. I mean, if you lose 4 out of those 6, or worse, 6 out of those 6, your season's pretty much over.
Yeah, that would be bad.
That would be bad. From a pastoral perspective, looking at what Roethlisberger was alleged to have done, what nobody charged him with, he's just held to a higher standard, I guess, by the commissioner. Does any of that matter to you as a pastor, or do you look at that as a fan? How do you view that?
Well, you know, anyone who is in the public light, obviously, especially the sports figures, they, and many of them do realize this, kids, people look up to them. They're, whether you like it or not, you're a role model. And you bear that responsibility, and unfortunately this isn't the first time stuff like this has happened, and unfortunately it continues to happen, and hopefully Ben has learned some things, which is what life is about, and life goes on, and it may have a very negative impact on the Steelers, and that's going to be on his head, and that's the nature of the beast, I think, Chuck.
I want to talk to you a story that comes out of Columbus, Ohio. That's not too far from you, is it?
No, not too far at all.
Not too far at all, so it's in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, 3 hours maybe.
And the headline is, Churchgoers and Strippers Protest One Another in Coshocton County. I hope I'm pronouncing that county correctly. You know, there was a time, I think, culturally, a pastor, where the church was right in the center of town, with a steeple that was high enough for everybody to see it in case you were looking for it. And the strippers and those folks, they were on the outskirts. You know, they were out in the boonies somewhere. Where,
other side of the tracks.
Other side of the tracks. Excellent metaphor there. But those boundaries have eroded in the last generation or so. And so now we have a kind of a face-to-face confrontation over there in Ohio. This is in Warsaw, Ohio. This story says strip club owner Tommy George rolled up to the church in his grabber orange Dodge Challenger, drinking a Mountain Dew at 9 in the morning and smoking a cigarette he had just rolled himself. Pastor Bill Dunphy stepped out of a tan Nissan Murano, clutching a Bible in one hand and his sermon in the other, a touch of spray holding his perfectly coiffed dew in place. Inside the New Beginnings Ministries Church, Dunphy's worshipers wore polyester and pearls. Outside, Tommy George's strippers wore bikinis and belly rings. Both men agree it's the classic sinners versus the saints, but George says it is up to America to decide which is which and who is who. Dunphy says God has already chosen. Tom George is a parasite, a man without judgment, Pastor Dunphy said. The word of Jesus Christ says you cannot share territory with the devil. That's a quote. The battle that has heretofore played out in the parking lot of George's strip club, the Foxhole, a run-down garage-like building at the Coshocton County crossroads called Newcastle, has shifted 7 miles east to Church Street. Every weekend for the last 4 years, Pastor Dunphy and members of his ministry have stood watch over Tommy George's strip joint, taking up residence in the right-of-way with signs, video cameras, and bullhorns in hand. They videotape customers' license plates and post them online, and they try to save the souls of anyone who comes and goes. Now the dancers have turned the tables, so to speak. Fed up with the tactics of Dunphy and his flock, they say they have finally accepted his constant invitation to come to church. It's just that they have come wearing see-through shorts and toting super soakers. They bring lawn chairs and grill hamburgers, monster energy drinks, and corn on the cob. They sat in front of the church and waved at passing cars, but largely ignored the congregation behind them. What's your initial reaction to this almost Super Bowl-like confrontation here?
You can't make it up, can you?
No, you can't. You're exactly right. That's an excellent first observation. Yeah. Pastor Bright is always right.
No, that wasn't the quote. That Pastor Bright is sometimes right.
I'm sorry. Okay.
You know, 1 out of 10, maybe. 2 out of 10, maybe. But, well, it sounds like both sides have gone too far. You know, everyone, you know, we have different sides here, different opinions. Perhaps the members of the church were a little bit almost to the point of harassing. There's this law of nature, you know, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction, and now they got it in their front yard. So probably both sides have, I would say, perhaps overreacted.
So what do you think of getting the, you had a board of elders there at Christ Lutheran in Pittsburgh?
Yes, we do. Fine gentlemen.
What do you think of getting the board of elders? And, well, maybe we won't be quite so provocative, but we'll take a video camera and a camera down to across the track strip club, and photograph the people who are entering, coming and going, and take pictures of the license plate, put that on the internet. Now that would be, I think, a significant deterrent to some folks. Obviously, some don't care. But there are those who wouldn't want to have that publicity, and that would hurt the strip club. That's all in God's will, isn't it, Pastor?
Well, we have the, you know, part of our understanding of the Eighth Commandment, you know, you shall not bear false witness. We do want to uphold people's reputations, speak well of them, and it really isn't part of the Christian way to go out of our way to get people into trouble, tear them down. In this case, one could certainly understand why people could justify that kind of activity, but generally, in the end, that's what you're going to get, is exactly what happened to this church, perhaps, is, well, you know, we have gotten personal, and now it's going to get personal for you. And that's what our churches believe. That's how we view God's will for what we do. We have, God has given us a government, and in this case we would say it's a God-given government. For instance, when my first call was to Grace Lutheran Church at Deadwood, South Dakota, for many, many years... Deadwood, South Dakota.
Doesn't sound like they even got any tracks to be across the other side of there.
Well, many tracks. There were the old gold mining and different mining tracks.
Yeah.
A small enough town where, yeah, there really wasn't another side of town. But actually a very famous place, Wild Bill Hitchcock and those guys, Calamity Jane. But for quite some time, there was a brothel that was operated in town. And one of the former pastors of where I served, probably it was maybe two or three pastors before me, and other concerned citizens, did object to that. And for the most part, you know, they used the legal structure, and the town then did make that. I mean, from the Wild West days, evidently those things, the laws didn't speak directly to those things. And, you know, with work and persistence, the city did change the ordinances, and that kind of activity became illegal, and the brothel was gone. And I wasn't there to see exactly how that was handled, but I think that's a pretty good, you know, pretty good picture of how these things can be handled. And I'm sure, Chuck, that there were some interactions between some of the more conservative townspeople, perhaps, and then some of the people involved with this house. But they did it, and it after that point, it was no longer an issue. And of course, this kind of thing in our story today, that's much more prevalent today. And you know, we drive by these things all the time. And you can help but, you know, see the signs. And you know, once I was just driving in an area, and I just I happened by one of those establishments. I was in a different part of Pittsburgh, and there it was. And so that might be, you know, somewhat more challenging to work within the governmental system, but it is there, and that's what we're given to use. And we have the gospel. And we also have, you know, the God-given legal structures in which our society is conducted for the benefit of all.
Now, as I pointed out, the name of the pastor here in this scenario is Pastor Bill Dunphy. I'm reminded of that Old Testament story of Elijah and the prophets of Baal, where Elijah takes them on.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it with great confidence, even exuberance. He even taunts the prophets of Baal and pokes fun at them, ridicules them. And I'm thinking that Elijah would be proud of Pastor Bill Dunphy. What do you think?
Well, the prophets of Baal all wound up dead, so you might be right. Yeah, there was like 400 and some of those guys up there, and they killed them all.
Is there room for provocation in the kingdom of God, Pastor? Is there a time when the church in town, in the middle of town, needs to say, you know what, we've got a presence on the outskirts of town across the tracks there that is not God-pleasing, and it's not appropriate for us to sit in our sleepy little congregation here on Sunday mornings and pretend it's not out there. We need to go do something. In which case, Pastor Bill Dunphy has gone out with his video cameras and others, and he has done something. Is there a time and place for provocation, Pastor?
Well, I'm thinking of the fruits of the Spirit: kindness, gentleness, you know, generosity, meekness, self-control. Provocation isn't one of those in the list, and so I would say initially, with the right understanding, no.
Have you ever seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life?
Many times. One of my favorite all-time movies.
Yeah, I think it's number one on my list. And one of the lessons that seems to be present in that movie is that if Jimmy Stewart had not been there, George Bailey, had not been there at this moment or that moment, or this moment, moments that seemed rather insignificant in the grand scheme of things. But if he hadn't been there on those occasions, then Bedford Falls would have been Potterville. And so, on those occasions when Jimmy Stewart had to take a stand, he did it. And it makes me wonder, well, if Pastor Bill Dunphy doesn't take a stand, if he doesn't do what we described here, going out of town to the Newcastle strip club there, well, maybe you'll turn around one day and the strip club will be next door. Sort of the way Bedford Falls might have turned into Potterville if it hadn't been for George Bailey. So maybe we don't want to be provocative because we think we're better than other people, or we think we're God's army, or whatever it is, but maybe we need to act defensively so that the sin that surrounds us doesn't find itself on our doorstep at some point. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, Chuck, I totally agree with that. That kind of activity, in the end, we know it's just not healthy for our society. We understand why they're there. It's bad for marriages. All of those girls are someone's daughter. You know, we've got that. I mean, do unto others as you would do unto yourself. I mean, if that was your daughter up there, would you support that? We know it's generally brings down a community. It rots people's souls. The sexuality is how we have been created. God tells us exactly how it's meant to be used. And we know it's bad for our community. We know it's bad for society. And all the evidence is out there. And I would imagine many of the, not just the customers, but very perhaps because of the nature of their work, you know, so the employees, they're probably, I mean, not all of them, but I would say that there's probably a good number of them who, after having been in that kind of work for a while, really feel empty, and they probably really could use, they're looking for, you know, spiritual fulfillment, or if you will, in their lives, and there's a huge ministry actually that's opening up, that, you know, people need help, and it's not good for the community, it's not good for our society, much like many other activities we have. That, and there, it's, now I agree with you 100%. It's not good, and therefore we should speak out against it, and we should work towards having those things, you know, eliminated, you know, restricted as much as we can do. I think we have other issues such as that in society where it very much behooves us to. And I'm thinking of abortion too. That's not one of those things where you get into, well, it's my right and it's my choice. Like with the clubs, and overall, it's just not good for society when you take a look at the big picture, and other reasons as well. You know, we have all kinds of theological, biblical reasons, and there are even some. There's an issue of freedom of speech and human rights. We get into those issues as well. But yeah, I think to me, Chuck, you hit the nail on the head. We should. It is good to speak out, as my church in South Dakota did. Decades ago. It wasn't good for the society. It wasn't good for the community. It's not what they wanted. It wasn't the will of the people, and they changed it. And I think that's a good example held out for us in terms of what can be done.
One more question on this particular subject, and I want to create a kind of a hypothetical situation. Let's just say for a moment that you're not pastor at Christ Lutheran Church in Pittsburgh, but you're a pastor in a neighboring parish to Warsaw, Ohio, and Pastor Bill Dunphy is a Lutheran pastor. And so because you are in proximity to him, perhaps you share circuit meetings together, you're acquainted with one another. Eventually that circuit meeting comes around when you and he and maybe 3, 4, 5 other guys get together, as you pastors do in circuit meetings. Would you look to advise Pastor Dunphy? Would you look to question, well, why are you doing it? Do you think you should be doing it? Do pastors involve themselves in in other pastors' business on those occasions? Or, you know, do you just say to yourself, why don't the guy be doing it? But whatever you want to do, that's up to you, brother.
Well, it reminds me of the saying, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. It's advice. You know, the proverb says, rebuke a righteous man or a wise man and he'll thank you for it. Rebuke a fool and he'll kick you back in the face, that kind of a thing. What I would envision, Chuck, happening in a situation like that is, Bill, I hear you got some interesting things going on over at your parish regarding this establishment, and how's it going? What's going on? And maybe drop some thoughts in there, but my experience has been if you become confrontational and say what you're doing is wrong, this is how you should do it, well, you know, what does he care about what I have to say? And say, well, I've heard about this other situation like I have, and it's like this is what they did, and it turned out good, and I don't know if that would be any help to you. That's, to me, the kind of approach where actually you might be able to offer something that they could use. But as far as rendering advice unsolicited, oftentimes that doesn't really turn out to be very valuable and sometimes a bad experience.
All right, let's turn our attention to a different topic here. I'm looking at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the edition from today, page 813. This is the editorial section. There is, right in the middle of the page, a comparison between two photographs. The first photograph is a picture of a very lovely girl, and the second photograph is a picture of a girl who doesn't look like she's had a very good time. The headline on the pictures is, "A Scourge Harming Our Youth." Underneath the pictures, it says, "Meredith Killingsworth's 2005 high school senior picture." That's on the left, where she is a very attractive young woman. And a police mugshot from an arrest in March, where she is not very attractive. Killingsworth's parents have tried to help their daughter battle a heroin addiction, but they have been unable to help her. Just a couple of paragraphs from this story written by Daniel K. Duncan for the Post-Dispatch. Kids putting themselves at risk by using drugs is nothing new. Heroin and death, nothing new. Kids using heroin to the degree we currently see it, that is new, and it is horrifying. A recent Post-Dispatch article documented the descent of a teenage girl into heroin addiction, which unfortunately is becoming rampant. We're seeing an escalation of heroin used by teens, the likes of which we've not seen in the 45 years that our agency has served Greater St. Louis. This is a threat that the public needs to be acutely aware of. In the past, the use of heroin largely was confined to urban ghettos, considered a major contributor to crime because of its unrelenting grip on those addicted to it. However, the profile of the average heroin user has changed dramatically. Youth from middle class to affluent neighborhoods across the region are trying heroin. By the time they suffer the inevitable consequences of addiction, they also find a lack of services available to help them. Often these are youth you never would imagine using heroin, youth with the potential to do anything they might decide to do with their lives unless heroin enters the picture. Is this shocking and alarming to you, Pastor, or are you saying, oh no, I'm already in tune with this?
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. I mean, what I think is very unfortunate is there was a time, and I believe we're pretty much out of it, but there was a time where even advertising was actually glorifying this. I mean, if you remember, Chuck, it wasn't too many years ago. A number of the models in some of the clothing ads and things and other ads, they had that heroin look.
Yeah.
And it's like, so what are we doing? I mean, what are these people thinking? I mean, how many famous people have died from this, and how many lives have been touched by this? Why in the world would anyone even consider promoting this? And I'm not blaming it on those photographers and those agencies.
Sure.
But what it does illustrate, though, is how of how central of an issue it has become.
Let's continue on the other side of the break here with Pastor Ron Bright, who's sometimes right, here on Ask the Pastor Bible Study. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dale Meyer, and I invite you to visit Concordia Seminary's newly redesigned website. It's easy to navigate, and it's full of information about the seminary. But best of all, resources for you and your church, resources you can download. Go to www.csl.edu. That's www.csl.edu.
Peace Lutheran Church in Lima has long been an enthusiastic supporter of radio ministry through their live worship broadcasts on Sunday morning and midweek during Lent. Pastor Dennis Castens and the congregation of Peace Lutheran Church invite you to listen on Saturday night at 5 p.m. as well. Saturday evening worship is often a more relaxed and casual style of service, which many people find beneficial. Feel free to tune in Saturdays at 5 p.m., live worship from Peace Lutheran Church on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Our new government-controlled health care plan, known as Obamacare, was modeled after the British National Health Service plan. Recently, officials in England announced wide-scale rationing of health care services like hip and knee replacements and cataract surgery. Many terminally ill patients will be sent home to manage their own symptoms like pain. Nursing homes will be closed. Surgeries will be done only with prior approval and on a case-by-case basis, meaning the rich and powerful will likely be served and the poor turned away. Mr. Obama used a backdoor approach, circumventing Senate approval, to appoint Donald Berwick to head our health care. Regarding the British plan, Mr. Berwick said, "I am romantic about it. I love it. I say, get ready for rationing in America."
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Free indeed. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. An Ohio judge has released runaway Christian teenager Rivka Berry from state custody on her 18th birthday, ending a legal battle that failed to reunite her with her Muslim parents. Her attorney, Angela Lloyd, said Berry planned to celebrate her birthday privately with friends Tuesday.
She's looking forward to having some time, reflecting on what's happened, trying to be Rivka Berry, the Christian evangelist who's ready to go out and preach the word.
Rivka Berry ran away from her home in suburban Columbus to Florida last year, saying she feared harm from her parents for converting from Islam to Christianity. Her parents denied that, and police in Florida and Ohio found no evidence she was in danger. Berry, an illegal immigrant from Sri Lanka, has asked to remain in the U.S. while she consults doctors on how to prevent a recurrence of uterine cancer. I'm Steve Coleman.
Did you know that before a person is saved, it is not possible to have proper repentance? In fact, there are two kinds of contrition, namely, worldly and godly. Only godly contrition counts. On the next Law and Gospel, we will explain how many are confused about the notion of repentance and how God explains His way of thinking through His Word.
Weekdays at 6 on KFUO Radio.
AMA 50 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling, with a showroom in the Mid-County Trade Center, 8463 Delport Drive. Reliable Heating and Cooling features Lennox air conditioning and furnace systems and services all brands. Reliable also provides senior discounts. Reliable Heating and Cooling, serving you from North, Mid, and West County exchanges. The next time you call Reliable at 423-3535, please thank them for being an AMA 50 KFUO underwriter.
You're listening to our Ask the Pastor Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you'd care to join us with a question or a comment, our guest is Pastor Ron Bright, Christ Lutheran Church in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're looking at a story here in the Post-Dispatch, the St. Louis newspaper here, "A Scourge Harming Our Youth," written by Daniel K. Duncan, describing how heroin has infiltrated new parts of the demographic, particularly among young people. There is a particularly poignant picture here in this article of Mark and Reba Killingsworth, the parents of Meredith Killingsworth. They appear to be middle-class people in your typical American middle-class home. And I think the pain on their faces is apparent. Their daughter has been taken from them by heroin. And as it says here in the article, they have been unable to help her. As a pastor with kids in confirmation class, kids graduating high school and getting ready to go off to college, live on their own, does any of this strike you, Pastor, as a personal responsibility for you? Is this largely parental territory? Will your heart ache if a young person comes back to your church maybe 6-7 years after you had them in confirmation, you find out they're addicted to heroin? Is that on your radar screen?
Well, we actually have had that happen here.
Can you, I don't want you to share intimate details, I don't want you to give us names or anything, but can you tell me what that was like to walk in that valley?
The situation that I'm familiar with, this particular individual hadn't been a student of mine, comes from a family, has been close to the church. I mean, my bringing it up, it's like, it has happened. I have seen this happen. I know parents to whom this has happened, and you would not expect, just in the grand scheme of things, that would something that would happen to this family. Much as you were saying earlier, Chuck, in the article, and I've seen this, and it is sad, this kind of a situation with the heroin addiction, to me, it is connected with other issues that young people and many congregational members face. Just not having, not being connected to God enough, and I don't mean that in a condemnatory way, but just in a matter of fact reality. Not being close enough to God to realize that, what Christ has done, in Christ, by His blood, by the power of His word, we are transformed into new creations, kings and queens of heaven itself, heirs to all that God possesses, which is unlimited. We just have a hard time with our finite minds and our worldly experiences understanding and taking in and receiving what God has done for us. And if when that happens, then lives are changed for the better, and our lives cease to be boring. Our relationships, they're not always going to be good with anyone. It's impossible in this life, but we have the tools to deal with that. And whether it's heroin, whether it's the other issue we talked about earlier in the program, it's related. Anything like that we know just isn't helpful for people. Those, and we have many of those different things, kind of things happen in the parish, and they're all heartbreaking. And then you think as a pastor, if we could only, help lead them in this direction, if we could only open their eyes a little bit more so they could really see, oftentimes we believe that would help, and it's extremely challenging because, what the tools that we work with, very spiritual. It's something the eyes of the world just cannot receive. It's something that doesn't come naturally to us, and it can be frustrating, Chuck. Definitely, Chuck. It can be even heartbreaking. Absolutely.
Well, the story in the Post-Dispatch today comes on the heels of a story that broke just a few days ago in Seattle. Fox News reporting that Seattle is now passing out free crack pipes. The story says, for more than 20 years, local heroin addicts have relied on a collection of needle exchanges for clean works, but in recent months, crack users, too, have quietly found an outlet in the city. In a nondescript alley in the University District, users can pick up clean crack pipes, pipe filters, and ascorbic acid for injecting crack. Heroin users can also pick up a drug that reverses a heroin overdose, an apparent first for a city needle exchange. Here's a quote. We take a different philosophy approach than most government institutions or public health departments. They have a budget and have to pick and choose who they're going to help. That's Shiloh Murphy, executive director of the nonprofit People's Harm Reduction Alliance, which runs the U District Needle Exchange in Seattle. Public health officials know of no other local program that gives out crack kits or naloxone, the heroin overdose reversal drug, but they see the potential benefits. Does that sound like a positive to you, Pastor, or a negative?
Well, I believe it sounds like these people are trying to do the best that they can with the resources that they have, and they're dealing with reality. And I guess that's one way to do it. And I'm not going to condemn them for doing that. It's like if that's really what you feel is the best way to go, you know, and definitely this is going to help people. And it's maybe, to me, perhaps something of a cop-out, but they are dealing with reality, and they are going to be helping some people with this. So, I mean, at a certain point, how can you really speak against that?
Do you have kids, Pastor?
Yeah, I have four, and my oldest is 14, and so so we're battening down the hatches. Last week, our first child got their first cell phone, so we're getting right into the 21st century here, and the waves are beginning to toss in the Bright household.
2 years away from having your first driver in the house there.
Among
your kids. Perhaps, yeah, maybe.
Perhaps,
maybe
yes.
More like 10 years. But, you know, when you engage in a conversation like this, we talk about this, these parents who are pictured here in the Post-Dispatch, and how obviously they grieved they are that they're going through this. Obviously love their daughter, and now she's been taken from them. So you're on the other side of that line, Pastor. You know that it can happen to you, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do, not so much as a pastor, well, maybe as a pastor, I don't know, but specifically as a parent, to shelter your kids from this terrible outcome?
Well, you can shelter them from it in terms of being exposed to all those things. The best you can do, and you know, we all understand this, the best we can do is to give them the tools, the resources, give them the attitude to be able to live in that kind of environment, because I'm not sure exactly where they're going to be going to college, and I'd like to send them to our own schools, but that may not be possible. You have to make them aware of it, what, of course, the risks and the dangers are, why you wouldn't become involved in it, but especially, above all, you have to really let them know that they are loved unconditionally, just like God loves us, and that's what the kids need the most. And that can be challenging certain days, as I'm dealing with, you know, four maturing boys in our house, and I can't speak on the girl issue, but that can be some days. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just like, well, I really didn't. Today didn't go very well, and but you know, hopefully tomorrow's a better day. But you keep trying, and it is a symptom of our society. Children need to be loved, and they need to be taught, and that to me is the primary thing. And all parents can do that. You know, sit down with their parents, sit down with their children, talk about them, but especially make sure that they know that they're loved unconditionally, and of course teach them how to have a good relationship with God, vice versa. And if you can, to me, that's the touchdown where you really want to spend your time and your energy, and that will reap rewards. Now, if I did have a child who wound up, for instance, on if we had the heroin issue, other things, my solution to that would be simple. Find them a place where they can go far away from where they lived, to where they can do something meaningful and with a purpose, something that will make them feel good, probably some kind of an altruistic activity, far away from any sources of heroin, and keep them there for as long a time as necessary.
Sounds like reform school.
Well, no, I don't know. To me, that wouldn't be. That, when you say reform school, the environment doesn't sound right. But the main thing is get them to a place where they just have no possibility of getting any more, in this case, heroin, and keep them there. And in time, they will change. That those issues will be worked out, and they will be able to break out of that. To me, that is the only real solution I have ever seen, that I have ever found. You know, we have the counseling, and those are all good, and the different programs, and get them out of this, just get them out of it where they can get any more of it for as long as the time as it takes until they're through that period in their lives.
Daniel K. Duncan, who wrote this article, his concluding paragraph is, we must have a treatment system in place. Currently, there is not enough treatment, not even close. Parents need to let legislators know the importance of protecting our youth by providing quality prevention and treatment programs in our schools and communities. Help us improve how we respond to this deadly epidemic. Believe me when I tell you, this is an issue that can affect your child. Is that what you're talking about, Pastor? We need the government to give us treatment centers, a treatment system where we can put addicted kids, young adults, and try to help them recover?
Well, what I was saying was just get them in an environment, a positive environment. I don't believe in locking kids up into rooms, and I'm not that kind of a therapist. So, and there is value, and some people do get some things out of there. But my experience has been, put them in a place, give them something to do, something that makes them feel good, something where they're contributing to some kind of a work or whatever it might be, where they have no chance of obtaining access to any of these substances. Keep them there for as long as it takes, 3 months, 6 months, I don't know. That is the best treatment that I have ever seen. When you have an environment where you simply can't get these substances, you have to learn to live without them. And by that very nature, many people are able to break out of it, whether it's alcoholism, in this case heroin, whatever your addiction might be. That is a cold turkey, but a very, very effective way to go. And with children, oftentimes you have the ability to do this. If you're an adult, you've got a job, you've got your kind of your anchored down, you might not very well have those kinds of opportunities, and then you don't have a lot of options other than treatment or other, you know, more options available in where you're at in your own locale.
All right, let's take up another subject here in the minutes that remain here on our Ask the Pastor conversation. This is a story from the Associated Press from Corona, California. The story says four teachers and seven other workers at a California Christian school have been fired because of differences in biblical interpretation and incompatible beliefs. Most of the dismissed workers were Roman Catholics whose beliefs conflicted with those of Corona's Crossroads Christian School, which last year lost its autonomy and came under the umbrella of Crossroads Christian Church, which is next door. The fired employees had been told that the school's closer relationship with the conservative evangelical church required them to attend a quote-unquote Bible-believing church. School Superintendent Beth Frobisher says 11 families have removed their children from the school because of the firings. So it appears here, Pastor, that we have Corona Crossroads Christian Church, and next door, somebody started the Crossroads Christian School, although the school was not an extension of the church.
Interesting.
And apparently they brought into their employment there a variety of teachers and workers, Christians all, but not necessarily of the same denominational or non-denominational perspectives.
Yes.
And then, for one reason or another, maybe funding, the school is moved under the umbrella of the church, and the church looks at the Roman Catholics that are present there and says, you can't work here, and you're fired. Now, there's somebody somewhere, Pastor, who, particularly people who are critical of 21st century American Christianity, and says, oh, there they go again. I tell you, those Christians, who would want to be a Christian? And, you know, here you've got a school, you've got families involved, you're doing good work in the kingdom of God, and the next thing you know, biblical interpretation and incompatible beliefs blows the whole thing up. What's the matter with you people? How would you respond to that?
Yeah, we didn't ask you for your opinion.
Ooh. Well, that's almost Pastor Bill Dunphy-like there. Yeah, that's kind of provocative.
Like, who cares what they think? In terms of, to me, this, I don't know exactly what the governmental structure of this particular organization is. Somewhere there is a governing board, if it's a school board, or if now that somehow that's connected to the church, it's their private organization, and as long as they're meeting the other requirements imposed upon them by, you said it was California?
Yeah.
They have every right to have whoever they want in their classroom. They're paying for it. They run it. They have the responsibility. Who am I to tell them how to do their business?
Well, we do have this 21st century phenomenon of tolerance and sensitivity, Pastor Bright. The implication here is that the Roman Catholics were told that they were not part of a Bible-believing church. That's a little harsh, don't you think?
Well, we understand what they mean. Of course, the Roman Catholic Church believes the Bible. Just probably a situation of they don't believe the Bible like the Crossroads Community Church does. And since the beginning of time, there have been religious differences, and that is the nature of the beast. That's reality. For the sake of peace, oftentimes it is better for us to work in our own areas and work together as much as we can, and move on. I would say that these Crossroads people have every right to have whoever they want in their classrooms. Our church here in Pittsburgh, we have a full day school, and all of our teachers
are... Is that
are,
K through 8?
Preschool through 8, and at least with the K through 8, one of our requirements is if you're going to be a teacher in our school, preferably you are of our own Lutheran denomination, but that's our first desire. We have from time to time an exception if you might be from another Lutheran denomination, but that tends to be rare as well. That's because the doctrine and the teaching is very important to us. We would never accuse a Roman Catholic of not being a Bible-believing Christian or probably any other Christian, but we do have what we believe is the correct interpretation, and our doctrine as Lutherans is our life.
So you would place an emphasis on biblical interpretation. I mean, the story says they were fired because of differences of biblical interpretation and incompatible beliefs. You would put an emphasis on biblical interpretation and compatible beliefs.
Yeah, and one of the ways we work with that is, we our denominations, we have very clear statements of what we believe the Bible teaches, and God teaches in the Bible, and it would just be understandable that once a church especially becomes involved in a situation such as the Crossroads situation, to me it would become very natural and very understandable for that church to really have a position where they want teachers that are in agreement with their doctrinal teachings. I mean, to me it would be perfectly normal. I would be surprised if it was otherwise.
So, in contrast to the person who wags his head and says, "You Christians, it's just disgraceful the way you argue over all these little fine points and you divide up into all these little groups, just disgraceful." You would say, I think I hear you saying, that distinctions, theological distinctions, doctrinal distinctions are important, and we should celebrate and champion the people who are willing to take a stand on whatever distinctions it is that they hold, and say congratulations for being to holding to your beliefs. This is something we should celebrate. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you did a pretty good job on that, Chuck. We have learned from history the true path to unity isn't through tolerance and acceptance of varying views, because if they will, that will come home to roost, and that will cause problems down the road. We have learned from history the real path to unity is to be on the same page with the doctrine and the teachings of the scriptures. We know it's been proven from history that's the only way to achieve true unity. And unfortunately, this side of eternity You know, the reality of the situation is we'll probably never, we may never have a situation where all the churches in the world will be in agreement. We have some very basic disagreements in terms of how God works, how where he's to be found, how he answers prayer, and what was the work of Christ on the cross. We have just fundamental differences, and that's the reality of the fallen world, and unfortunately, I guess we need to accept that, and we have to be able to work with that. Life is messy, and the church is even messier yet.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I think your perspective is correct, and I feel like if there's somebody who has a theological perspective or a doctrinal perspective different from mine, I want to hear what their perspective is. I want them to defend it as if they hold it dear to their heart, and then the two of us maybe can exchange views, and it'll be okay. We don't have to beat each other up.
Mm-hmm, right.
But I agree with you, and I suspect that a number of the folks who are listening to us now probably also agree. But everybody who holds that perspective knows what it's like to squirm a little bit in the face of the accuser who says, you know, it's because of you, Pastor, it's because of you, Chuck, that we can't get the church together, that we can't have the kind of unity that Jesus calls for and that God calls for in his word, because you're too divisive or you're too intolerant. And they create a certain sense of guilt, at least in some of us, maybe not in you, but in some of us. How should we react to that?
Well, God has revealed his will in the scriptures, and he calls us to be faithful to the scriptures. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And, of course, we are encouraged by St. Paul to watch our doctrine closely. These are things that God has given us to do. Great gifts, a wonderful commission, and we do the very best we can to work those out in our lives. And we're going to have some differences, and we have to be able to certainly acknowledge and respect other people and their differences of opinion. But I don't ask other people what they think about how I believe. It's like I don't know. It's not my business. It's not a concern of mine. We're called to be faithful to God in the best way we know how, and we can take satisfaction in that.
It seems to me, I'm probably quite a bit older than you are, Pastor Bright, but it seems to me that
quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, I can recollect a time when people could express themselves and their differences, and could be quite adamant about those distinctions, and we respected each other for holding to what
mm-hmm.
we believed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We might have disagreed vehemently, but we respected each other.
Yes.
Because, well, at least you've thought it through and you believe something. Now,
Yes. If
you are aggressive about your belief, that seems to generate disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
And I regret that seems to have been lost.
Yeah. Good point. I agree 100%. In the end, we are all people. We are all creations of God, and depending on where we stand, and some people, it's just like they are really in an entirely different orbit in terms of their opinions on many issues concerning us today. But in the end, they are people, and they are creations of God, And it's important that we respect those people. And that's kind of why in our first discussion about being provoking people, well,
yeah.
I don't think that's the right avenue to take.
Pastor, good to talk to you. Pastor Ron Bright, Christ Lutheran Church in Pittsburgh. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck. Blessings on your day.
And you too, sir. And tomorrow we will continue in the book of Deuteronomy. Pastor David Marth scheduled to be here for Deuteronomy chapters 29 and 30.
Needed for the Bible study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.